It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, we're back. Ali is away. He'll be back soon. But in the meantime, in between time, it is you and I hope you're doing good. I hope you're doing good. How you doing, matter of fact? I don't know if I asked y'all last week. How you been? All right. That's what's up. Okay. Well, that's good. Oh, well, thank you for asking. I'm doing good myself, for sure. Hell yeah. Actually, I'm feeling really good, man. Feeling really good. A little tired. It was a long, long holiday weekend, but it was a vibe. It was a vibe. A lot of fun shows. Good times, cool crowds, some better than others, you know. But we made it through. Speaking of making it through, them damn Knicks. Them Knicks that swept the Cavs. I don't know. I think, yeah, the Knicks had just... They moving fast, actually. They making quick work of these NBA teams, dog. Because I think last week they were just fresh off of sweeping the Sixers and looking. We were talking about what the series could look like. I predicted it was going to be a little scrappy. Nah. It was light work for sure. Shout out to Jay Dilla. Yeah, it was the bright spot in a very overcast Memorial Day weekend. That Memorial Day weekend weather was ugh. But yeah, I hope y'all had something. I mean, I don't know where y'all were. In New York, it was a little overcast. It was rainy. It was all of that. Monday was better than, you know, actual Memorial Day was okay. But everything else was, yeah, it wasn't beach weather at all. You know, salute to all of the fallen soldiers. You know, sometimes we forgetting in the midst of all of the sunshine and barbecuing and Frankie Beverly blasting that it is about fallen soldiers that, you know, died for our, you know, for our freedom. You know, and freedom is definitely a sliding scale. But, you know, yeah, salute to all of those that gave their life in the midst of service. You know, Knicks. Sheesh. Knicks undefeated, I want to say, since April 23rd, 25th. One of those two dates. Damn, that's over a month. They ain't lost in over a month. This momentum, this winning momentum is, I mean, it's hard to process. It's hard to process as somebody that's lived through the many, 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 many years of the Knicks. I don't want to say, well, being trash, almost reliably trash, just out the conversation, the opposite of in the conversation, especially as it relates to championships and deep in the playoffs. You know, this is the first time we've been in the finals since I want to say 97 or something like that, or 99, something crazy. I think 99. Wild. There was I'll probably put it on the IG story. There was this one woman that put up this thing of things that were not around since the last time the Knicks were in the finals, you know, and it was like social media, iPod, iPhone. The entire starting five of the San Antonio Spurs, like, it's a lot. It's been a long time coming, and the people are already wilding. It is already been a movie. I've been saying it for so long. If it does go down, if we take that shit, wow, just... It's going to be like something you've never seen before, but I hope to witness it from afar. I don't think I'd be on 7th Avenue. There's a part of me. 30% of me wants to be somewhere in that melee, but I already know it's going to be crazy. I don't know if I want to, because this, once you're there, you got to commit to it. It's no just passing through. You know, you can't just pass through the melee. You know, yeah, so... But it's going to be something. It's going to be, it's It's going to be something special. But at the same time, like I was saying, there is a nervousness. There's a little bit of a PTSD from all of the past, you know, fails and things of that nature. I think so many Knicks fans probably won't properly exhale until maybe a day or two after the parade. That's when they're going to finally unclench their fists and just let a grasp of sweaty confetti just fucking fall out in relief. Like, wow, I really lived to see this. Wow. 50 years. 50 some odd years. Crazy. Anyway, salute to the Knicks, man. I mean, this, you know, this Knicks win, this Knicks energy is so palpable. You already know, especially here in New York, you know, but even beyond, I think the Knicks winning, or sports, but definitely specifically the Knicks doing what they doing is almost like, it's like a content ecosystem, you know? Like, it's so many things that are being spun. Like, when the Knicks are winning, there's all types of, you know, artists and graphic designers that are doing their own spin on, you know, Knicks players. I done seen Brunson, Ben Poulton in the, what's the joint? What's the movie with my man, King of New York? I seen him, you know, get photoshopped into King of New York. I've seen him photoshopped in the New Jack City. I seen the Statue of Liberty with the broom. You know, it's a whole lot. I mean, I see a lot of dope photography. I see some great Nike ads. Nike kind of got a little bit of edge back. Nike, you know, their ads is feeling like just as abrasive as Adidas has been recently. So you're seeing that, a lot of think pieces. A lot of talking heads are eating. Everybody eating. That's when you're a content ecosystem. When you do things and the people can eat off of you. You know, Drake is a content ecosystem. You know, a lot of people been eating off of this whole Iceman trilogy. For good or, you know, bad. You know what I mean? A lot of deliberation on what the album is. How good it is. I mean, within the first 24 hours of the drop. You know, Kevin Hart has been a bit of a content ecosystem, especially with, you know, starting with the Funny AF and then, you know, the roast and then the fallout from the roast and all of that. And, you know, so it's a lot of that. And I mean, I don't even want to call it shout him out, but mention Donald Trump is still the ultimate content ecosystem. It is nothing but reaction to him, you know, for all of the ridiculousness and just, you know, everything that goes on. I mean, I think the most recent was the, what was it, 30 shots outside of the White House, you know, allegedly by a black man with dreads. I don't know. Again, I still look at a lot of this real sideways. I feel like they're casting even more and more. The last guy, let's make this guy a little bit more black than the last guy. I don't know what happened with the last guy, but this guy allegedly was killed. I don't even want to say allegedly, because if somebody was really killed, you know, rest in peace in that person, you know. But who knows? 30 shots. But as one of the spinoffs of that is the, you know, this was outside the White House, and there were, like, reporters that were doing live feeds. And there's one lady, you know, the first one I saw, the lady kind of reporting, she hears quite a few shots, more than enough to kind of, you know, duck. But then finally, somebody, I think on her team, was like, duck. So she winds up ducking. But then there's this other one. I wish I knew this reporter's name right now. But what is that? What is that? It's like, pow, pow, pow. What is that? She putting her head out. What is that? And it just, what is that? It's just kind of, it's interesting. It just shows, like, some people have no reference point for gunshots, I guess. Which is like, oh man, it is a stark revelation. You know, some people are so familiar with gunshots that they know the count. They know the count. Like, oh, that was seven. They know the duck, but they also, yeah, that was seven. I counted seven. What you count? Yeah, I think it was seven. Yeah, you know. So, what is that? So that's the latest piece of content off of that old, you know, the Orange Man's reign of terror. Flavored Hennessy is out in the world. Flavored Hennessy has debuted or has hit the streets just in time for Memorial Day weekend, just in time for the summer. That's all we need is an even more drinkable version of Henny. You know, make Henny even more palatable. I feel like they saw that Cutwater money that was going on. It was like, hold on, we could throw some flavoring in it. So I think it's about three. I think one is like a iced tea, one is a margarita, and I forget the third flavor. It's like a iced tea, a margarita, maybe like a berry or something like that. And the reviews are mixed. I've seen some people say, nah. So some people say, hell yeah, this is just what I needed. And then one person really was big on the iced tea one. From what I've seen, just the limited reviews that I saw, it seems like the margarita is the least favorite, you know. And that iced tea one is kind of, it's a hit out there. But I don't think I'm going to engage. I don't think so. I mean, I feel like I keep saying, no, I don't. But back and forth with myself this time, and I'm like, have I moved on from Henny? I jump in every so often. I'll have a taste. You know, I have a taste. That's what the drunk say. Let me get a taste. Let me see. Give me a taste of that. But, you know, I'll have a taste of Henny every so often. And it's still Henny. Henny is what it is. But the flavored Henny, I don't know if I'm really, I might have to just happen upon that. I don't think I'm going to go out and procure it myself. Now, if I'm at a function, and they got the flavored Henny on, I'm a pour a curiosity cup. Hopefully it's the iced tea joint. Actually, I don't care. I'm going to try whatever the one they got. But yeah, if you've had the flavored Henny yet, first of all, wow. You went, you got it fast. But if you've had a flavor, and that's no judgment. You know what I mean? That's no judgment. Listen, I done tasted at least seven flavors of Cutwater. So listen, yo, enjoy life. Just drink responsibly or not. I mean, listen, it's your life. If you had the flavored Henny, any of these three flavored Hennies, and you let me know, hit me in the comments, DM me, wherever. Let me know what's your review. How you feeling it? You know, it's me just going through the internet, just scrolling through the internet. My screen time is up this week. I feel bad about that because my screen time been kind of good. You know, my screen time been kind of good, but damn, I'm fucking. I didn't, my phone done made it back in my bedroom like an ex. And I've been looking at a lot of little weird shit on the internet. One of the things that I've seen, and I haven't really, really delved all the way in, but I kind of put a bookmark on it. There's this Guy Fieri, there's this one IG account that seems to be really trying to expose Guy Fieri's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives in a way of like just showing that he wasn't really eating the food and all types of other things. It's like a few videos. I only seen one or two. Now, I was a Triple D fiend. Triple D, I think Guy Fieri, I want to say, or at least that's where I got to it. I almost want to say Guy predated Anthony Bourdain. Now, Anthony Bourdain a little bit more highbrow. But Triple D was definitely helping me in my Yelp bookmarks. You know, that the best thing I ever ate on Food Network, that little talking head show, the best thing I ever ate, they stopped doing that a while ago. But like shows like that definitely made my Yelp bookmarks robust. But anyway, so I'm a little invested because, again, I watched hours of the show. And I like Guy Fieri. A lot of people don't like him. A lot of people, you know, he gets a lot of hate because he's very, you know, especially as it is compared to someone like Anthony Bourdain, who seems distinguished. You know, Guy Fieri pulling up in the, what was it, the Chevy or something like that with the frosted tips. He's a different demo. He's the everyman, you know. I don't want to even say MAGA or Jason. I hope not. I hope not. I hope I don't find out years from now Guy don't like blacks. A lot of people give him some hate because he's his I guess his food, you know, dives, drive-ins, diners, drive, it's pedestrian, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people kind of look down on it. There's a lot of snobbery in the food world. I try not to get close to that. I like to eat good wherever it is. You know, greasy spoon to Michelin star. Listen, let's keep that spectrum wide. But anyway, long story short, you know, Pete Wells famously killed Guy Fieri's restaurant that was in Times Square. I think he gave him like the one star, something ridiculous, something crazy, or no stars. I think it was like just one word review. I forget. I would have to go back. Y'all go in New York Times. Just Google New York Times Guy Fieri restaurant. You'll see the slander. Anyway, so yeah, I'm kind of invested in checking that out. Y'all could check it out too. I saw somebody in the comments calling it a low stakes conspiracy theory, which was funny. Speaking of that, Sunday night I was at a show and I was chopping it up with a couple comics. My man Oscar Aiden and Takara Elise at the show, and then somehow the conversation turned it to conspiracy theories, and they started sharing conspiracy theories. I don't know if this is a conspiracy theory or just gossip, but allegedly Nicki Minaj might be dating Elon Musk. That's wild. That's bugged. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, that whole Nicki Minaj pivot or heel turn, whatever, is baffling me. That's one of the things that's baffled me, like, on a level that, I mean, it's got me befuddled. I went to go see the new Boots Riley movie, I Love Boosters, starring Kiki Palmer, Keith Stanfield, Taylor Page, Demi Moore. You know what I mean? It was cool. I enjoyed it. Let me see what they say. A group of shoplifters take aim at a cutthroat fashion maven by stealing her clothes and reselling them at a lower price. What they call fashion forward philanthropy, which was supposed to be the three F's. That's a bit from the movie. But anyway, I'm not going to spoil it for you. The joint just came out. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, man. Like I said last week, you know, Boots is weird. He offbeat, you know, like his whole thing is real absurd and maximalist, kind of in the realm of like Tim Burton and Wes Anderson, but like with black people. The movie feels like Technicolor, you know, there's like weird music scores. The costuming is, you know, it's like over the top. Everything is over the top. Everything is throw everything at the wall, you know. But it becomes his style. Like the more I'm seeing it, the more I realize that's his style. That's what I can expect. It's also what I notice is it's also like similar to like what he did with The Coup. There's a lot of, you know, commentary on capitalism and workers' rights and, you know, things like that. And it gets, you know, the way he kind of addresses themes could be a little heady and like, just like I said, very like surreal, like just, you know, it's not always grounded. You know, you're along for a ride when you delve into the Boots Riley cinematic universe, you know. But I'm happy that there's somebody out there or another black director that's not afraid to go left with it, you know. So yeah, it was good, man. I enjoyed it. Again, I'm not gonna give you any spoilers. I would encourage you to go check it out. It's definitely worth seeing in the theater, you know. It is, like I said, it's odd, it's different, you know, it's a good time. It's a good time. Good performances by Kiki Palmer, Naomi Aki, Demi Moore. Like, it's a vibe. It's a whole lot of TV. Some that I haven't finished. I told you, add to the list of the things that I haven't finished. I haven't finished Hacks. Haven't finished Hacks. I'm a few episodes and I need to get to that. The Chi came back. I saw the first episode of that. I might start talking about The Chi, but probably not. I don't think I have a history at all about The Chi on the show, but I saw The Chi. You know, it's the final season, the 8th and final season, so we'll see where it goes. I finished Nemesis. Talked a little bit about that last week. I enjoyed it. I see a lot of criticism online. A lot of people weren't feeling it. A lot of people weren't feeling, what's my guy's name? Matthew. This is something I've been doing. This is like my own little challenge, I guess. I'm trying not to IMDb black actors. I mean, I'll do it when I'm on the pod. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll do it when I'm on the pod or whatever. But, like, in general, like, if I'm watching a show and I'm like, yo, this actor look familiar, I'll try to be like, you know what I mean? I'll try to do the, you know what I mean? Snap remembering, like, before I go to the internet for assistance, because it's something real satisfying when I can identify a black actor or a black actor. Just like, okay, that's such and such. It just feels like a win. You know what I mean? It feels like a good answer. Feel like Family Feud or some shit. So that's something that I'm doing right now. But for this time, right now, I'm going to tell you what my guy's name is. Oh, Matthew Law. He been getting a lot of hate. A lot of people ain't feeling Matthew Law and Nemesis. I said last week, I just think it's, I mean, his performance was cool to me. It wasn't anything to really throw a tomato at, but I do feel like the way they wrote him was like, it's hard to really like have any, like to, like, yeah, to be on his side. You know what I mean? And typically I often root for the bad guy, the guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, I typically don't really root for the cop, you know, it's very rare. But they really stacked the deck on him being likable. Again, I'm not going to give you no spoilers or nothing, but it's a fun little watch. 8 episodes, it's a fun watch. So I finished that. I started Man on Fire. Only 1 episode in it. That shit pretty good so far. That shit's really good, actually. So I think it's about that time. Euphoria season 3, episode 7, Rain or Shine. That's the name of this episode, Rain or Shine. Again, we about to have some spoilers. You already know. So if you have not seen it, pause this, come back later or whatever. Or, you know, yeah. So it opens up with what looks like, for a hot second, I was a little scared. And I don't think it was. It's like, I guess it was kind of a flashback of Ali. You know, Ali Muhammad, the other Ali Muhammad, Coleman Domingo's character, in a roach motel, smoking crack with Natasha Lyonne playing a prostitute. You know, and that's another show I never really followed up with, like season 2 of Poker Face. I like Poker Face the first season, but yeah, it's one of the other ones that's on that list. But anyway, so we open up, we seeing Ali and Natasha. You know, he hired her, I guess. You know what I mean? For whatever they're going to do. But it seemed like he just wanted somebody to get high with. So then he's smoking crack. You got to see him as a crackhead. But it went back and forth because, like, the hair changed. Because there was a moment, like, where Natasha's like, her character's like, yo, you married? He's like, yeah, I'm married. Then they cut to him at the dinner table. And I think that's supposed to be his wife. She's like, yo, where were you? But again, the hair didn't match. So that got a little, it threw me a little bit. But they beefing, they having a crazy fight. The kids here, the parents fighting and shit. It sounded like it get violent, whatever. But this was Ali's past. We finally see, you know, how addicted he was back in the day. And it's sad, man. Coleman Domingo, you know, Ali, such an underused character on this show. Like, I think this is his second appearance this season. You know, this Euphoria cast, the bench is deep like the OKC Thunder. Thunder or the Spurs, who cares? Come through, get done up. Anyway, yeah, so, I mean, they got so many people. They got so many storylines. So it was cool for them to throw another Coleman Domingo appearance on the joint. So we see that. And then we also see that his transition to kicking his habit and getting sober and becoming like and doing service and, you know, basically living to do service. That became his redemption, I guess. His redemption arc is to be there for all of his sponsees, you know, and then it's like a bit of a montage of him, you know, trying to inspire some of his little sponsees to kind of, you know, encourage them to keep the faith. And his mantra will be, hang in there, the future will be bright. And it's a couple times where he says that, it you know, cuts straight to that person, either like in a coffin or hanging, you know, like basically dead. So it just didn't get bright. It got dark. So we see that. And that was just kind of just that opens up, that reintroduces Ali back to the show and to the arc with another one of those voiceovers by Rue. Then we go back. We see Big Eddie's back. You know, he's bandaged up, stapled up, got a colostomy bag, you know, got a walker. So he's broken down. He's talking to Alamo. Alamo's prodding his staples, you know, smacking around his shit bag. Alamo got no empathy for this man. This man, Alamo, is stone cold. So much so that he's putting Big Eddie back on the road with the same people who might have shot him. You know, he's like, yo, listen, I need you to do a run. He's like, well, why couldn't you get some of the other people? He's like, well, listen, they didn't fuck up. So it's on you, basically. So now, broken down Eddie, he got to get in the truck and basically shuttle a couple dancers, Kitty, and I want to say somebody else. I don't know if it was Magic, but he's shuttling a couple dancers and some of Lori's people down to Mexico to go get some fentanyl, I guess, or, you know, to do a deal or whatever. So that he's on the road. We cut to Rue, who is, you know, since last week, she's seen the light, literally, you know, with the burning bush. She's a believer. She is changed now, you know, and now that she's changed, she's looked at as even more strange, you know, especially by Lexi, who thinks she's using again. And that's something that I thought about. I was like, that's definitely has to be the addict's burden, especially when you were like really addicted and you were kind of disappointing a whole lot of people in your orbit, that it probably takes a very, very, very long time for people to believe in you again. People not to just dismiss you as you on that shit again. Any type of weird behavior, you must be using again. And that's gotta be that's a hurdle. Because if you're trying to stay sober and, you know, trying to walk the straight and narrow, you know, the fact that you don't get any benefit of the doubt, that could make somebody just throw their hands up and be like, man, fuck it, and go back to drugs, you know? So, unfortunately, that's kind of what's going on with Rue and particularly Lexi, but Lexi's very judgmental, you know, a little writerly. Like, she just always cocooned in her apartment writing, you know, and her apartment is real well-appointed with the Breathless poster in the back and, you know, vintage typewriters on the shelf, you know, things like that. She takes herself very seriously. Allegedly, I've heard that the Lexi character, a lot of it, her being a writer, is supposed to be like a representative of Sam Levinson. But anyway, so we see that. We see Rue is changed. She's on the road to redemption. She's on the righteous path. And a lot of people are looking at her just, you know, like, come on now. They don't quite believe it, you know. So that's her arc. This episode, we're going to see a lot of Nas. You know, Nas pressing Cassie and Nate because Nas still want to get his money. And besides just using, just beating the shit out of Nate, you can't get blood from a stone. They beating the shit out of Nate, and ain't nothing really. It's just, and took a finger off and everything, and the money is not coming in. So he's trying to start pressing his cash cow, who's Cassie, who just, lost her OnlyFans audience. She just lost her OnlyFans audience, and now, she can't earn. She's devastated because now it's really hitting her that, her money is real funny, especially because L.A. Knights, they got rid of her. So funny how she had to make a decision, and she basically cut her own water off for a producer's whim, the Sharon Stone character. I forget her name, but she goes to, one of the execs, and they're like, yo, we really don't feel comfortable having an actual sex worker, portraying this sex worker on the show. It's just a little too seedy. And that's been like a refrain throughout the entire season. Like, when it gets too real, it's too real, So like, damn. So Cassie, she gets recasted by an actual actor. And, so now Cassie don't have no way to make money. She done lost her whole audience, her whole OnlyFans audience. She calling OnlyFans customer service, talking about, yo, it was an emergency. My boyfriend was bugging. Is there any way that you could kind of, reinstate my account? They're like, nah. At the same time, Maddie gets fired from her job because this is like the second time that she's been porn star adjacent, and her boss feels like, you out here misrepresenting us. You got us looking like we in that business. And again, this underworld shit, they not trying to do it. They don't want that. They want to keep things real sparkly, real Hollywood, real on the up high, So Maddie gets fired, and Maddie, goes back to Cassie because Cassie's like her bottom bitch, if we going to be honest with you, her best friend / bottom bitch. So she come back to Cassie only to find out Cassie don't have her OnlyFans, and she pissed off. She kicking her when she down, literally slaps the shit out of her. This is the second slap. Slaps the shit out of her. Wow, what's wrong with you? And Cassie's like, I don't know what we could do. You think I could get my OnlyFans back? She was like, nah. She's like, I got a plan. And then, Maddie's pimp hand is real Thanos level at this point. She's like, yo, I'm about to work your ass. I'm about to work the shit out of you. I'm not your friend no more. I'm your boss. So they put together a play where Maddie basically sets up Cassie with Dylan on a date, calls the paparazzi to kind of catch him. And, Cassie's good at doing her drop. Oh, it's just me, Cassie, and then Dylan out on a date with Cassie getting smooth finessed. And Dylan is so like Draymond Green. Like, he don't see none of this coming. She working this cat. They hang out. She bring him back to the crib. He's sitting on the floor, And, man, listen, speaking of Anthony Bourdain, in the pursuit of the, it'll take you to parts unknown. So Dylan is in the spot. They drinking well liquor. Cassie running the play on him. They jump up and down. She's super faking the crazy multiple orgasms. Put that man to sleep. Goes through his phone. Uploads, she's the greatest fuck ever. And all of Dylan's thirsty fans, they flood Cassie's. They start following. I think she got like 10 million followers in 7 hours or something like that. So they finesse the kid Dylan. Lexi's very upset about that, because, she is. They have basically corrupted, their star. So that's what's going on. Cassie, trying to get her comeback, trying to put it all back together, trying to build some money. So there's that. In the meantime, Rue, another thing, because Rue was over at Lexi's house, you know, kind of recounting everything that's going on, recounting the fact that she's a believer and then she feels like God spoke to her. But also in that conversation, she told Lexi that, you know, she's working with Nazis and even working with the DEA. Now, Rue is so, like, ridiculous sometimes. Like, she just, sometimes she just can't, you know, see the forest through the trees. She's like, she go, what are you doing, Rue? You know, you working with the DEA. You are a snitch. You know what I mean? You wearing a wire. And you going to tell a writer about this? So she tell Lexi, and you know, Lexi's a big mouth, and that turns into a telephone. Lexi tells Maddie somehow. Rue also winds up telling Ali. Rue's telling too many people, but I guess she feels isolated. One, because a lot of people aren't, you know, they're not feeling her new enlightenment. And she got a lot of burden on her, you know, and she's handling it by herself. So she feels like she's alone on her journey, you know, but this ain't the way. You don't tell nobody, you know, especially if you're trying to stay alive. What's going on? They run into play. They got supposedly, so Rue's going to go back down to Lori and volunteer to mule one last time for Lori. And then they're going to do a whole a bye. And hopefully the DEA is going to arrest everybody and Rue will be off the hook. That's what Rue's, that's her exit plan. That's what it's looking like, right? They shuttle in Kitty and I think Magic down to Mexico. We find out Kitty's going to get a BBL. You know what I'm saying? She says she's trying to get the biggest ass available. And she ain't really thick. So, you know what I mean? It's not gonna play well. One of the dancers was like, you ain't even got no body for all that ass. What you going to do? So she in there eating. She trying to, you know, to get her gains on. She eating fucking quarts of ice cream and bunch of donuts or whatever. She's trying to bulk up for the BBL. And then one of the dancers says, don't die, bitch. Which is, you know, kind of, I guess, in poor taste. She kind of immediately was like, my bad. You know, it was a little much. But anyway, so they going on their way. Marshawn's driving Rue close to Lori's. And then it makes me, I mean, not Marshawn, pardon me, G, is driving Rue down to somewhere a little close to Lori's, and you know he's like, "Yo, you got your story together for how you gonna get back with Lori?" And she was like, "Yo, I mean, I got a story. I kind of need you to punch me in the face." He like, "Yo, if I punch you in the face, I'ma probably knock you out, and we ain't got the time for all of that." So Rue goes ahead and smashes her face into the dashboard. Looks like she gives herself at least a bloody nose, if not breaking her nose. She's committed. She's committed. I ain't going to lie. And then she starts to walk off to the Lori spot. I'm curious how many times Marshawn has ad-libbed, because there's one line where he's like, damn, Rue, you walking like your booty stank. I don't know if Sam wrote that or if that was just some old Marshawn Lynch shit that he felt like saying. Anyway, Cassie's at the crib trying to figure it out. Got her OnlyFans going on. She's over there doing dick ratings and whatever the fuck. Whatever she got to do to get some paper. And she's in the spot, I guess, in the OnlyFans trap. She gets a knock at the door. Here come Jimenez gripping her by the neck, smashing her through the glass coffee table. Jimenez is brutal. Nas come in and they like, yo, you know, we need this bread. Because your man, Nate, he owes me. He's not coming up. I haven't gotten any payments from anybody. I know you over here making money. Something got to give. So they got her hog-tied, the whole thing. Rue comes by looking for, you know, almost gets killed. Because Jimenez got the gun with the silencer to the peephole. And she walks away at the right time. So that's what's going on. They give Cassie they basically give her an ultimatum. They're like, yo, you got to give me $1 million in 72 hours. She's like, well, why 72 hours? He's like, that's how long it takes to dehydrate. She's like, well, you're not going to let me drink? He's like, nah, it's not true. It's Nate. They done buried Nate alive in the desert. Being buried alive in the desert, being buried alive in general, is an S-tier fear for me. I don't know where it ranks, but it's up there. It's one of those. Nobody wants that. Being buried dead or being buried alive in the desert with like just a breathing tube, but it's also exposed to like random rattlesnakes, you know? So this is Nate, at least 6 feet deep, screaming for his life. His brother pulls up looking for him. Brother don't hear him, pulls off. You know, it's been bad. Rue and Cassie have had a tough season, but I mean, as cartoonish as it is, ain't nobody had it worse than Nate this season. I mean, he been going through it. Rue leaves her phone in the truck with G. I don't know if it was on purpose or by mistake. While it's on the seat, Jules calls and someone texts Rue. I don't know if it was mom, a.k.a. the DEA. I'm not sure. We see another burning tree at the little Nazi pregame kickback. Now, at the Nazi kickback, Wayne and the rest of the goons don't really trust Rue. You know, they looking at her like, yo, so why are you coming back over here? You know what I mean? Like, you feel like you can't trust Alamo. What makes you think that we trust you? She's like, you know, Rue goes on this whole little rant about, you know, she's been lying so much, nobody believes her, but, you know, she's this is where she needs to be, this, that, and the other thing. Wayne and the other guy, they like, yo, just because now you see the light don't mean that you don't have to pay for what you did, for your mistakes. You don't have to atone for your mistakes, you know? And they're like, what mistakes? Well, the mistake that you did, the penalty that you did was, you know, what you did was treason, you know? And the penalty of treason is typically death. So now they thinking, should we kill her? Should we chop her head off? They saying all this in front of her, you know. And then ultimately, Wayne walks up to Rue. He's like, look, this what the deal is going to be. We want you to be the one to kill Alamo. You're going to pull the trigger, you know, because he ain't going to see that coming. So Wayne goes over there to kind of shake her hand, you know, to confirm the deal. He puts his hand out. She puts her hand out. He pulls out a knife and just slices her hand. Wow. Slices her hand, fucks her shit up. She's tight. You know, she starts to, you know, bleed out, damn near bleed out. She takes some duct tape and to seal the wound. They're basically torturing her lightweight, you know. They also they make the plan, Wayne and Fanny, or Wayne kind of tells Fanny, this is what you're going to do, you know. There's no middle ground. You know, they like, it's either black or white. You know, we can't trust Rue. It's either black or white. And it's funny because Fanny's like, isn't she both? It's like, there is no middle ground. You know, so this, isn't she in the middle? You know, I think that was a commentary on her being biracial. But anyway, isn't she both or whatever? It's like, nah, there's no middle ground. And he's like, you know, back in with Nazis and Nazi training, you know, they tell, when you start Nazi training, you know, you get you a nice little adorable puppy that you raise and you feed and you know, you play with and all of that shit. And at the end of your training, you got to basically cut that puppy's head off just to prove that you're serious, to prove that you are all the way committed. And basically, that's what I need you to do, Fanny. I need you to put Rue down like a dog, like he on it, right? So they got Rue locked in a room and basically, to be killed later. Rue don't know that, but to be killed, right? On the other side of things, Cassie calls Maddie, you know, tells her the whole situation with Nate. Oh, right. Maddie comes over while Dylan is still passed out after the whole session, right? He don't even know he going viral, right? And he did, I guess Cassie threw it on him so crazy, he went and get himself a glass of water. He drinking water with a full finger in it. He don't even realize it, you know. So Maddie's in the kitchen. She look over. She sees the finger in the glass. She's like, she about to bug out. Cassie is so nonchalant. Oh, damn, I don't know how that got back out. So now Cassie got to tell Maddie about the whole Nate situation. She's like, I need your help. I need $1 million. I need your help, right? So Maddie goes to Alamo to get the money, right? And then that's a whole nother thing because, you know, she don't want to go to Alamo, but she's the only person who says, you the guy that I know that could get shit done. So obviously, you know, Alamo ain't going to give you nothing for nothing. There ain't never something for nothing with Alamo. So she pulls up to the Silver Slipper. Magic tells her, yo, put that bathing suit on. Alamo told you to put that bathing suit on. So, and then as Maddie's about to, you know, as she's considering putting the bathing suit on, I think it was Magic that says, she says, you trade 1,000 bad days for a good life, which is interesting. That's some, I don't know if that's, I don't want to say horror logic, but it is what it is. It's bleak. Anyway, so boom. So Maddie gets the bathing suit on. She meets Alamo in the hot tub. And Alamo is like, yo, if you want something, you got to get up in this tub with me. So she gets in the tub. She's telling, you know, she's telling what she needs with the whole Cassie situation. How she needs $1 million. Somehow Rue comes up and then, you know, Maddie kind of lets it slip that Rue's got a lot on her mind, a lot going on with her. And Alamo's like, well, like what? He's like, well, you know, she working with Nazis, the DEA, and then Alamo peep it, but he play it smooth, right? He heard it, but he don't let on that he heard it. So they basically, you know, Maddie's still focused on helping Cassie. And he like, well, you know, you're gonna have to do something. You know, you got to come on over here, you know. We gotta negotiate. And it cuts to the next day. You see Maddie standing up against the wall. I think in another bathing suit or another little outfit. Now, I'm not sure if they jumped off or not, but something happened. Because now Alamo's packing a bag with what seems to be $1 million in the satchel. And they're going to go do the deal. So then they go meet Nas out in the desert. You know, right there where Nate is buried alive. Alamo pulls up with Maddie. Nas pulls up with Jimenez and Cassie. And, you know, they're going to go do the swap. So, you know, Alamo tells Maddie, this is your deal. Go bring him the money. So Maddie takes the duffel bag out there with the $1 million. And she's walking across. You know, it's funny because Maddie seems to be pretty unflappable. Even in the face of like real danger, she holds her own. She stays kind of cool with it, right? So she pulling up, she's walking over there, she drops the bag off. Cassie comes out handcuffed. Nas tells her to go get the bag. She pulls up, get the bag. She brings the bag back over to Nas. Meanwhile, Alamo's in the car watching all of this. He gets out the car and you see him, you know, see him lick his thumb and feels the breeze. So, you know, he up to something, trying to see what this wind current is looking like. So the bag goes over to Nas. Nas opens the bag and there's not $1 million in there. He's like, well, you think this is a fucking joke? And then Alamo shoots him in the head. Wow. Nice. Shoots him in the head. Just sharpshooter. Jimenez pulls his gun. Alamo like, yo, you better be good with it. Put your gun down. I'm surprised Jimenez put his gun down. I'm surprised Jimenez. I thought Jimenez was going to go all out for Nas. He just seemed like such a brutal henchman. But I guess he wasn't really built for the smoke. So Alamo walks over to Nas, who's, you know, sputtering in the midst of dying, you know, and he puts another one right in his head. Wow, shoots him, kills him, done. So then they get Jimenez to work the bulldozer to kind of dig up Nate, hoping that Nate is still alive. Cassie's like, Nate, we're coming to get you, you know, all of that shit. Alamo's back there with Maddie, and he's like, listen, you know, I get 20% of all future earnings. You know, it's like, that's a steep price to pay for friendship. And then Maddie kind of like, damn, you know, I didn't know you was going to do it for free. Basically, I thought you had some real money and I did all of this thinking you was actually, you know, actually risking real money. He was like, real or not, you know, the debt is the debt. You know what I'm saying? He says, listen, he told her, he said, what'd he say to her? He said something. He said, listen, it's about time that you got to wise up, basically. Some shit like, you know, shit is real. You know what I mean? I know y'all young and all of that, but this the game. And listen, everything still stands. I don't do nothing. I don't do anything for nothing. So you're in debt, you know. They tear through the thing. Nate is dead. Bit, obviously got bit by that rattlesnake. His tongue swole up due to the, you know, the venom reaction. You know, he's dead. So it's all of that for nothing. It's a really interesting shot when they go. I don't even know if they show Nate's dead body yet. They don't even show Nate dead yet, but they show Cassie and Maddie reacting to the fact that Nate is in that box dead. And Cassie is hysterical. And they pan up to Maddie, and it's just like her with the backdrop of the sky. And you can't really read her face, whether she's happy, she pleased, you know, you can't really read her face, but it's a ill shot. And you see Nate twisted, looking done. So that's kind of how that all pans out. You know, Cassie is going to be working for Maddie for quite some time, and Maddie's going to be working for Alamo for quite some time, probably forever, or who knows. Anyway, at the same time, like I said, Wayne locked Rue up into some little back room, you know, to get her in the morning for the meetup with Alamo, and ultimately for her to kill Alamo, you know, allegedly. In the midst of all of that, in the middle of the night, Fanny cracks the door, opens the door, and says, yo, we're gonna crack the safe, we're gonna get this money, we're gonna get up out of here. And Rue's like, all right, you sure? You're like, yeah, we're gonna go for it. So they go downstairs, they quietly, Wayne asleep, they quietly get to the safe. Rue has the 3D key. The 3D key don't even work. It's like, shit, the 3D key don't work. Wayne's still kind of asleep. So Fanny goes over to grab the actual keys, and she got to move the gun. I don't know why she didn't just keep the gun. She got to move the gun, and then she grabs the keys, and it's like janitor levels of keys. So it's like super loud keys. Rue face when she hear all of the key noise is mad funny. So then they finally crack the safe, but the safe is loud. All of this still, Wayne still doesn't wake. He stirs a little bit, but he don't wake up. So they going through the safe. There's no money in the safe. Just a bunch of IDs from a bunch of silver slipper dancers, you know? So now the plot thickens. So they intertwined it a whole nother way, right? So at that moment, Fanny feels deceived. She's like, you told me there was going to be money here. You told me I was going to get the money. And Rue's like, calm down. You're making too much noise. Relax. I don't know what's going on. She's like, put all that shit back. Like, no, listen, we need to grab this, you know, whatever, whatever. And then at that point, fucking Fanny, she just screams, ah, you know, to wake Wayne and the whole house up. And then it cuts to black. It's like, fuck, cuts to black. And it's another cliffhanger. There's been a lot of good cliffhangers this season. You know, I mean, I don't know if this is at least the third cliffhanger. So we got a whole nother cliffhanger. We got one. I think this is the last episode coming up. Allegedly, it's supposed to be maybe 2 hours or something like that. But this was a good episode. A lot of tension. They know how to ramp up the tension. A lot of tension. A lot of things in place. A lot of things in place. And I mean, shit, Nate died. So they ain't playing. There's people that are actually getting killed off, you know. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see if everybody survives. You know, there was a moment where I thought maybe Maddie could get killed. I mean, everybody's on the board. Everybody's on the board. And, you know, like I said, it would be crazy for them to kill Zendaya, but maybe Zendaya's booked. Maybe Zendaya said, yo, listen, I can't commit to a whole nother season. Y'all might have to kill me off. I don't know how well Euphoria would do without Zendaya, but we'll see. I'm excited to see how this last final episode, and I don't know, there's talks that this could be the final season. There's talks that this could be the last season. I'm not sure if that's confirmed yet, but I got to find where he said this, but from what I understand, Sam Levinson said there's going to be like some real stakes and some real closure. So maybe somebody else gets killed. Because Nate being killed is, that's a main character. And he out of here, you know. So we'll see. I'm curious to see how Alamo plays it. Because Alamo is cunning. So is Cassie. You know, Rue just be stumbling through. You know, like she just be, you know, I don't even know. She playing it by ear damn near. Maddie got, you know, she know how to move a little bit. It's going to be interesting. Let me know what you think, what you thought about this episode. Let me know what you think about this season so far. If you got any predictions, hit me in the DMs, hit me in the comments, you know. And we'll be back. We'll be back next week with more of that. Also, hopefully, the link didn't go live, but again, 920 Arlington Draft House. If anything else comes before that, I will keep you posted. DamianLemon.com. As soon as that link goes live, I'm going to put it on all the accounts. But, yeah, that's it for right now. And as always, tell a friend to tell a friend, and even an enemy, to get in the conversation.
Hello.